We are back for the lightning talks. Could you maybe quickly raise your hand if you have not been here yesterday? Okay, that's only very few of you. Could you raise your hand again if you also haven't been here the past 2 years or so? Okay, then quick recap for those who weren't here yesterday. How this is going to go is that there is 5 minutes per speaker for the lightning talks. At the point where there's 15 seconds left, I'm going to raise one hand in the background. And you start with a very quiet, very subtle applause so that they can continue talking but know that something is up. And once those 15 seconds are over as well, I will raise my second hand. And then you start a very loud, very nice applause so they have no chance to continue talking. All right. Without further ado, we will start with Shanine, Sarah, and Annabelle from PyLadies, and then the next speaker will be Misha. So Misha, please go back to the audio desk and get yourself hooked up with a microphone in the meantime. All right.
All right. Hi, everyone. We are Annabelle, Sarah, and Shanin, and we are the organizing committee of PyLadies Zurich, and we'll talk about who we are, what we do, and why you should definitely join us. So we aim to provide support and mentorship to all of our members, and we welcome especially women and other underrepresented genders in the industry. And we want to see our members actively participate in the Python community and its leadership as well. So what that means is that regardless of your gender and prior knowledge, you should and can join us. And we are just open to everybody who would like to support us on our mission.
So PyLadies is a global network. You can find more than 100 PyLadies chapters all around the world, from San Francisco to Singapore, as you can see on this world map here. There's also a global Slack space where PyLadies can connect all around the world. And each chapter organizes its local meetups, workshops, and hackathons. And the PyLadies also have a strong tie to the Python Software Foundation and the Python open source community. And since spring 2025, we now have the first chapter in Switzerland, PyLadies Zurich. So you can join us for great events. We aim to organize at least 2 meetups every year with input talks and discussions afterwards, maybe a coding session or a mini sprint at some point. And there's usually also an apéro and a networking part. And we are open to all skill levels, whether you're a curious beginner or an experienced developer, you're very welcome to join. And here's a photo from our last meetup.
So I think we already said that. Please join us. Why should you join us? You can learn and grow in a supportive environment. For example, you could share something you're passionate about. Maybe you're working on a hobby project. Maybe you're learning new skills and you want to exchange with other Pythonistas. We would like to share our knowledge, get inspired by each other, learn with each other. And last but not least, maybe together we can help make the Swiss Python community more diverse. We hope to see you at our next meetup. We can exchange, and if you even feel like maybe talking about something, as I said before, some project of yours, maybe just for 10 minutes, share your knowledge. We would welcome that very much. And also, if you want to help us organize a meetup or have an idea for an event, please reach out. You can find us on Meetup, Mastodon, and LinkedIn. And I said once more, all genders are welcome. Thank you very much.
Next up will be Misha telling us about types, and then after that, Elizabeth. So Elizabeth, please go back to the audio desk to get a microphone. Yours.
Wonderful. Hi, everyone. Before I will start with the main content of my talk, I have seen in the previous presentations throughout the day that there have been cats shown at least four times, which my human intelligence took as an advice. So my overfitted, biased intelligence told me that I also have to show one. So this is how my typical home office day might look like. And while you're looking at it and while I have your attention, let me start. So my talk will be about creation of PDFs and hopefully beautiful PDFs. We have heard also in two talks today that parsing PDFs and transforming them into machine-readable format is difficult. Now we go in the opposite direction. We want from machine-readable format to generate a PDF. PDFs are nice, and that's why they are abundant in the world. That's why we need to parse them, because humans can read and understand them quite nice. They are standardized format, many advantages, but they every now and then they appear as a requirement. You might need to generate a report at your work. So you might write Python code day to day, but maybe a stakeholder still wants to get not an application in the browser, not a dash, Streamlit, whatever app, but a PDF report sent on an email for whatever reason. Or maybe you need to generate a CV that you want to apply for a job because you are such a cool Python developer. So you want to have a nice CV. And I can tell you that many CVs do not look very appealing. So if your CV is beautiful, you will stand out and you will have better chances for people to remember you. So let's start. The framework that I want to show here is called Typest. There are, of course, other options. Many of you might have heard of such thing as Microsoft Office, existed in the past. I have heard that it still exists. From that, you can also extract a PDF, but it's tidysome, not pleasant experience if you have done it, especially for large documents, especially in an automated way. Oh. There are other options. I personally have worked with LaTeX, also a good option. You can kind of with some Jinja templating with whatever, you can automate it, kind of parse it, populate it with some values, all possible. But if you had some errors and it didn't work as expected, for me it was always an unpleasant experience. So this is a new kid on the block. No, that's close, I think. No, it didn't move. Where is the pointer? I guess this one. No pointer, cool. So basically there is the name, very unusual, Typest. Typest, doesn't matter. It's a new kid on the block. There are definitely other solutions. So that's one of them. I'm in no way associated with this project. I'm just a happy beginner user. And my claim is that even for a beginner, that's a very useful framework that allows to do you wonderful things. And as many of the new kids on the block, there on the bottom, you see that it's astonishingly fast. It generated a report in 7 milliseconds, which is very fast compared with LaTeX if you had experience or generating PDFs from Word. So you can actually craft quite complex reports, putting various stuff with various distances between them, all possible, putting images very similar to LaTeX, but on steroids. So I also mentioned CV. So the previous report that I have shown was actually Greenfield project. So I was just setting something up from scratch. So more work, but actually community is quite large. If GitHub stars for you is a measure, they have 40,000 plus stars as of now. So it's a popular framework, even though it exists as an open source framework. It exists only since 2-ish years. So it's new, but super popular. And there is a large community which also generates templates. Among those, there are also templates for CVs. So this is actually like a template that you can use and your CV will look like this. Already not that bad. There are skills with kind of this fields or kind of field areas. There is experience on the left, two columns layout, quite nice. You can put your image, but with a little bit of effort, and I said, I'm just a beginner, and still with a little bit of effort, I was able to put some icons or logos of the companies where I worked at, or I was able to style the stuff in the way how I wanted, also highlighting the experience in each of the areas and putting pictograms for all of the projects. Thank you very much for your attention.
Your phone. Then we have Elizabeth telling us about Renku, and next up will be Eduardo. So Eduardo, please go back to the audio desk and get a microphone.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Capon. I am part of the Swiss Data Science Center, which belongs to the ETH domain. And I will be presenting today Renku, which is a collaborative platform for data science projects. The problem we're trying to solve with Renku is connecting a very heterogeneous ecosystem that we have whenever we are doing data science projects. On the one hand side, we have a large variety of the data repositories where data is hosted, and also our data files or our data storages can be in several formats and in different platforms. On the other side, we have heterogeneous, we usually use code version control. We have either the public GitLab or GitHub, or our institution has its own hosted Git instance. And last but not least, regarding compute infrastructure, many times our laptop is not enough for doing our projects, and we need to go to HPCs or to our cloud providers to host our data science projects. So in order to connect all these different elements under the same platform, we have created Renku. Renku helps you to share your data science projects and ensure reproducibility, discoverability of your work as well for the larger community. And last but not least, you can trace where the different elements such as data is used across your work in the platform. So our vision is that to provide an open source platform that connects the ecosystem of data, code, and compute for people so that you can collaborate and create collaborative projects and communities. This is the snapshot, we try to do this in a very user-friendly manner. So this is how our user interface looks like, and it's very intuitive to create data, to create different types of sessions, and to insert as many code repositories as you need. And also, of course, you can add the collaborators, and you can work together within a team. It's up to you if you decide to work in public projects and you make them openly available, or if you prefer to keep them private, either for given the sensitivity of the data you are handling in your project. So with Renku, we take collaboration to the next level. We allow you to connect your favorite tools and platforms. And on the other hand side, we allow you plug and play flexibility. We give you the freedom to decide which compute environments you want to use. You can select, you can have almost any compute environment, and we will see it in a later feature. So I will go through the features very fast. On the one hand side, on data, we allow flexible support to attach remote storage for groups and projects. You can share data connectors across different projects, and you can import from public data repositories. On the code side, you can connect to almost any Git code repositories. If you don't find it there, you can contact us, and we will be happy to add it for you. And we allow automatic credential management, and allow sessions to be started with secrets. Last but not least, you can use almost any Docker image with a web front end. You can, as I said before, you can use secrets in sessions, and it's very easy onboarding. If you don't know how to create a Docker image, there's no problem. We provide you Docker images for Jupyter, RStudio, and any other compute languages, or combination of them. Last but not least, the most important focus of Renku is on collaboration. We support public and private group spaces. You can create your data connectors, create template projects for you and your collaborators. And you, once you create a group, your groups are searchable. So you can use the keywords or metadata for finding your projects. So who is Renku for? We have different types of users in Renku. We have developers, we have educators who do teaching on top of Renku, and also we use it for event organizers. So in hackathons, we also use, you can also leverage Renku. So with this, I close. with this, this is my last slide. Thank you very much for your attention, and feel free to use it.
Then we have Eduardo talking about testing in Jupyter. And next up will be Stephanie Wedel. So Stephanie, please get back to the audio desk.
Great, thanks a lot. So let's say that you want to teach somebody programming. I think if you have been there yesterday here, I think you know my stance. If you ask me what should I do to get better in programming, well, start doing Advent of Code. But what we are talking about, a person that is a complete beginner. Okay, so I very much like this quote, which says, learning is not the product of teaching, learning is the product of the activity of learners, which means for me that we have to empower people who are learning with the right tools, right? So let's say that you ask a total beginner, please complete this function and just write the code to solve the quadratic equation, something we learn in high school. Then maybe this person writes the code, and then they will ask you, the educator, how can I know, how can I test if the solution is correct, if the behavior of the function is correct? So there are many platforms out there that allows you some kind of interactive building of tests for your solution. So if you are asking a person to write a solution to a simple exercise like that one, then they can give you like some regex engine to match the result or other, I would say, more fancy stuff. But we are Python developers. We love open source. So why not using something that is already there and it's extremely powerful, like Jupyter? But how? How can we give useful feedback to a Python, to people that are learning Python in a workshop, or in a tutorial, or a class? So, and now enters PyPyTest Suite, which is essentially PyTest in Jupyter geared toward learners. What does it mean? These are essentially a very beginning, at the very stage, alpha version or baby, whatever package, which we call IPyTest Suite, and does exactly this. So let's go back to the example before of the solve the quadratic equation. How would we do with this package, IPyTest? We would write like a skeleton for the solution and then tell the student a bit more instruction on what we are expecting to do. And then with this magic, it's literally called cell magic, the package provides you this cell magic. And what does it do? It just wraps the content of this cell around PyTest. I will get to, how later. And essentially, you, the educator, the teacher, whoever, just need to write normal PyTest tests around these functions. So how do you write these tests? Well, for example, you can use PyTest parameterized to run multiple tests on the same solution to check that all the numbers, maybe you have edge cases and so on. And then you just use normal PyTest and assertion and so on. Everything that you already know for PyTest work for IPyTest Suite. And you actually should also provide a kind of a reference solution. So the students, if they get stuck, they should be able to see, what are you expecting me to do? Please give me an hint. So you can provide a reference solution, and the naming is actually important, because IPyTest Suite allows the student to see the solution after a given number of attempts. Okay, so we are not leaving these students just out in the wild with no problem. With no hints. Okay, so what the student sees inside Jupyter when they run a cell and the solution doesn't work? Well, I would say a more user-friendly output of what it did wrong, how many tests we run, and some kind of helpful, definitely more helpful than the raw PyTest output. And I think if you really want more, there is also a, like an optional feature, really optional here, which is some kind of AI explanation and reviews that will guide the student like in like a guided interpreter to the assertion error and output of my test. So you are actually telling the student some hints on, oh, look, maybe your return is should be filled with a float and not a none and so on. My experience is that beginner people found this feature extremely helpful, okay? Under the hood is just, again, PyTest wrapped in a custom plugin. And then we capture the test output, the result, and so on. We pass in a, I would say, clever way, but there is room for improvement. We format it, and then we just render in the Jupyter Notebook with all the IPython display and connected machinery. Optionally, obviously, we attach some AI wrapper to provide this AI explanation, and we are also working on the review things. We have like 2 tutorials, 30 students, and open to all the ETH domain. So if you want, just scan the QR code, try it, contribute it, and have a chat if you're interested. Thank you.
Thank you. That was very interesting. I actually built something similar for my students, so we really need to talk afterwards. So, Stephanie, about Bookworm and some abbreviations. And then next up, there will be David. So David, please get a microphone in the meantime.
Yeah, so hi. My name is Stephanie, and I needed a project for my generative AI class. And I talked to my boss, and she was like, yeah, it would be good if you automatize something for the company. And I was like, not sure. Or I built something for myself. And this is what I did. So I am a bookworm. I love reading books. And I have notes with book recommendations all over the place. So I did the only reasonable thing. I plugged them all in the SQL database. And then I came across something that is called reading challenges. And reading challenges are like tasks. You see here some examples. And I put them as well in the SQL database. And then I thought, now what? Now I have these two data sets. Would be nice to match them because I don't want to go to any of this. And then I built like a small app with Streamlit and also some OpenAI, and this is my landing page. So what you have here is like a short explanation of what my Streamlit or what the project is about. Then I have some Spotlight book, which comes direct from my database. Then I have a gamification page. Please don't focus too much on the on the design. I'm not a web developer, so I just used what I could. And then you can also create your own bingo card to play along with me. It has the same recommendations or the same task. And then the most important thing is actually the matching pipeline. So you can select a prompt, and then you can move on in the pipeline, and it will check if there's already an existing match. If there's no match, it will go to a router, which will first look for regex patterns, like is there some page number, is there something about the title or the author? And then if that's not the case, it will actually go into a genre matcher where it will check if some sort of genre is mentioned in the reading prompt, or if it can detect some genre from it. The next thing it will do is, if nothing of this fits, it will take the prompt and go to the LLM and say, okay, look up if something of this exists or not, or if there's some, from the description of the content, if you can match something to it. And yeah, that was my project. And I like my boss very much. She's awesome. And I will build that automation tool for her, but that was, of course, much more exciting for me. And I will finish this with the question, what is your favorite book? Please tell me. I will put it in my SQL database. Thank you.
Then we next up have David with editable Git dependency with UV. And after that, we will have Philip. So Philip, please get back to the audio desk to get a microphone.
This is the button, right?
This is indeed the button.
Okay. So I've been procrastinating 2 years doing this lightning talk. Back then, UV wasn't really around that much as it's prominent today. I did it for poetry. Now it's getting out of fashion, so I did it for UV. But I have a project, actually two, where I face the situation that I need to reconcile multiple repos and project management and no package management index. So I want to have three, and you have to choose two. That was for half a decade my issue. Like, you either go fast, but then you lose visibility of your versions, or you are very, very dev-friendly, and you can reproduce your environments, and you end up with package index again. I wanted all three, really. So I was looking for a sweet spot with editable Git dependencies, which are on your local development path. Now, the problem is it's not really supported. However, I didn't give it up. So I ended up with an ugly solution, which works for the customer and actually is quite feasible. So let me show it. Our circumstances, we are 14 repositories. Don't ask me, that wasn't my decisions. Those are private, and there is shared code. Now, we have a very low skill expectation because this project is not really active. Developer can Git clone, that's a must, and they can even Google how to use UV, but they are super lazy, and they will always forget. Now, we have multiple app repositories consuming the same lib, and we want to know the exact versions because we are professionals. However, the applications can decide to update that dependency separately. Yeah, first requirement, sir, the lazy developer, the cloned repo, it should just work. They should just start refactoring like mindlessly across 14 repos, shift fsec, rename, add new parameter, whatever, it should just work. And no commit, no feedback loop, nothing, like really instant feedback loop, no package index. It's acceptable if the CI has to do more, but as few hacks as possible, please. And it's okay if before commit, your local repos break. So there are some opinions and choices, which I am happy to talk about in the break. Because please find me if you did a better solution than this, because I have to throw out my solution. But I came up with the following one. So there's the lib structure where I put funlib, which is our business logic library, and the funlib dev clone next to each other. My local setup consumes the dev clone, obviously, but dev clone is only the proxy of funlib for the exact dependencies. So funlib is nothing special. Any project could be getting here, no matter if UV or not. However, the dev clone is proxying it. And that's the only place where I allow myself to use setup tools, because it's also going out of fashion. It's really just proxying. So locally, I can immediately find references and refactor without recompiling anything or doing any magic. Now, the root workspace of UV is looking like this, referencing both. And you have to look at the workspaces, it's the fundamental feature of UV. And the consumer is basically referencing both the Git dependency, because I want the Git tag to be exact and tell my CI how to deploy this to production with an exact Git hash. But I also want the dev clone default for local development. Notice that dependencies are empty. However, I need to dictate UV something default. Yeah, you have to choose one, right? Like there's funlib and there's funlib dev clone. Yeah, I still have 20 seconds. So the default is dev clone. However, I want to make sure the developer doesn't mess up if they are too smart. The exec and dev clone must not be there together. So there's a hack. I could not make this happen. There's a Git issue. It's not supported. They don't intend to. However, you can do this with an extra hack. You just remove the empty proxy, and then you're set. So if you have a better idea, please find me.
I actually had exactly this problem with the project. So I really wanted to let you finish, but also I didn't want to make a special rule for you. I'm glad you finished just in time. So next up, we have Philip telling us about Euro 2024, and after that will be Alex. So Alex, please go back to the audio desk and get a microphone. It should be.
Okay. So, well, I wanted to talk about how Python saved me last year when there was Euro 2024. Well, nothing special, but for me it's very useful. A little bit about me. I come from Croatia. I work at Reversing Labs. It's a cybersecurity company. We had a talk about cybersecurity, for example, like there was a sneak advisor. We have the same thing for community, like secure.software called. I lead three teams, but more important for this talk is the next thing, and that's I love soccer. So is anyone here loving to watch football, soccer? Yeah, okay, few of you, okay. Well, for me, I don't know how you watch the games, but I had a problem how to watch all the games. So if you watch, I watch all the major leagues and everything. So if you watch the entire games, it's too much time. If you watch the highlights, then you know probably the score already because they always write the score and everything. So what I did, I said, okay, I will scrape the interesting minutes. There are things for that. And then I'll watch the recordings and skip to the interesting minutes. So I can in a few minutes watch the entire game and do that for several games during the weekend. The thing was, I did that locally on my computer, you know, some scripts and things like that, and I could always watch what I want. But then I realized it's Euro 2024 and I'm going to Krakow to a conference, and I realized, okay, I don't have my computer. I would need to translate it to some laptop and things like that. Three matches per day, it's like 6 hours. I don't have that much time. So the day before the conference, I spin up hiddenscores.com, my simple web page with I used Flask, some simple HTML. It will be the ugliest thing you'll see today in the next slide, but it's useful for me. I have several scripts which run by cron jobs and populate the data in the database. So what I wanted to say is it's really easy, especially now with the LLMs and things like that. So if you have some something to show, for example, this Monday, Slovenia, Switzerland, okay, 44th, 71st minute, 83rd second. Okay, three things happened. Still, it was 0-0, no. So, but Switzerland is still first on the table. But for example, Portugal, Hungary, well, several interesting things. And in 91st minute, what happens? Portugal is leading 2-1, 2-2, Szoboszlai scored. So I watched that, you know, without watching the entire game. So that's how it looks like. But also I later added some algorithms for prioritizing games. For example, today you see, okay, the most interesting game should be Paris Saint-Germain against Strasbourg. Okay, they're like first and third. And why? Well, they have great players and things like that. So that's the thing I use for tracking and watching football. I watch many good things in the games in a less time. So that's it. If you want me to add the Swiss league, send me an email and it'll happen. Thank you.
Next up will be Alex with 40,000 a year, but why? And Pavel, we still have time for your talk afterwards, which was waitlisted, so please go to the back and get a microphone.
All right. Hello again. The first motivation for this talk was something I overheard in the morning, and sorry for eavesdropping, but I heard someone saying something along the lines that they would love to give a talk, but they don't know what to talk about. And I've been thinking about developing a talk about DevRel and my experience so far around this topic. So this kind of inspired me to do this. And I thought, why not prepare a talk in a couple hours while listening to other talks? So hopefully it turns out fine. And just a few fun facts about me. Again, if you miss my talk in the morning, so I've been 10 years in IT. I've been DevRel for the last year mostly. This is my first time in talk, surprisingly, even though I've given already more than 40 talks, and I have 4 cats, so I'm continuing the cat trend over here. Now, another fun fact about me is that I'm an introvert, which kind of doesn't really match with 40 talks in a year, right? And how it all started is, well, I work for a startup, and you know how it works in startups. You need to be in a lot of different places, so I had previous speaking experience, so here I am, right? So basically, it all started at PyCon Poland, 2024, actually. And since then, it sort of escalated quickly into all the different pages. And this one goes to the collection, all the different selfies and all the different flights. And yeah, it started from one talk all the way to 10 different talks now. And why I keep doing this? Well, technically, it is my job now, so I sort of transitioned from leading DevOps team to DevRel team. I enjoy knowledge sharing, so I actually, long time ago, I actually also taught at the university, and since then, I kind of love sharing the knowledge, sharing the new UX stuff. It is also about getting out of the comfort zone, and just a reminder, I'm an introvert, so for me as an introvert, it's always a bit nervous to be talking about in front of people. A bit of spoiler. It is also about learning new things and about, of course, free travel. And this is probably the first thing that comes to mind to everyone when they hear that I travel for work to conferences. Free travel, yay! And reality is, sometimes I get things like this. So if you look at the dates, I basically spent less than a day, less than 24 hours in the grid. I came in at night, give a talk in the morning, and I left the same day. So basically, flew in, gave a talk, flew out. And yeah, so okay. That's me, I guess, in the corner. And this is the reality of DevRel. And people think it's about traveling and going on the beach and whatnot. But reality is it's completely about different things, about, again, knowledge sharing, about learning new things, coding, and so on. And should you try to do it? Well, I would say yes. Probably maybe not 40 talks in a year, of course, but it's a good way to, first of all, move out of your comfort zone, especially if you're an introvert. And going back to the sort of the motivation of this lightning talk is I always hear from people who have never done the talk, my colleagues who want to try to do this, that they don't know what to talk about. Like, I don't have a topic. And when I was sort of brainstorming the ideas for the name of the talk with the ChatGPT, it came up with a list. I actually ended up using none of those. I ended up thinking about my own topic. And yeah, well, at least it didn't say that I'm absolutely right, but it wasn't close as well. So it's good. Now, all the topics which he suggested are here on the slides. And I started putting them on the slides. And it quickly became looking like a sort of online success coach on the Instagram, all the stocks. You can do it, all that. But there is also actually truth behind this, because we sort of subconsciously we live in a bubble, in a sort of in a mind bubble, and we think that everybody knows what we know, right? So everybody, like for example, I work in AI space, and I, you know, I would think that everybody knows about AI, but reality is not. And the best talks which you might start with is talk about what you're passionate about, and maybe not with this space, but you know, still talk about what you're passionate about. Like a good example was Bookworm talk just a couple seconds ago. And also don't get discouraged. So this is my sort of stats for reactions and acceptance. And yeah, feel free to connect with me on my socials. Right.
Thank you. And finally, we have Pavel telling us about screen timeout of my laptop. That should not be screen time, I think. Oh, well. Telling us about a wonderful Swiss weekend with Apertus.
Thank you. Okay. Hey, everybody. Yeah, those who were here yesterday, it's good. Yeah, newcomers, also welcome. So basically, today, I think it would be very nice if we finish Data Science Day with something that is about Swiss data science. So, yeah, you know this talk. Let's go to the fact that already, I think, many people mentioned that today is Friday. So, like, if you have plans for the weekend, I would say that this is perfect time to travel around Switzerland. Yeah. So, I mean, we live in, I think, the best country in the world. Those who not yet, move. So, basically, then, like, Saturday, Sunday, let's plan how to spend it. And, like, how should I know, yeah, like, where to go? I can Google, I can do whatever. But I thought, okay, let's ask the one who should know it the best. Swiss AI. And basically, Swiss AI, it's called Apertus. I don't remember today it was like mentioned, but maybe it was, sorry. So basically, it was released a couple of months ago, and it is like a big project that was many times already announced, and then finally, okay, it was released. It's like EPFL, ETH, Swiss National Supercomputing Center. And today it was like some stuff about like not having a good model in Romance language. It has, yeah. So, like, there, if you need to speak Romance, then please, like, ask Apertus. So, okay, good. I thought that now it's a good moment to do some little app and to just ask, let's say, what I can do. So, basically, I use this Apertus that they now released on Hugging Face, as usually, all these transformers, and I use the smallest one because I deployed it locally. So, I mean, like, I have forgotten to say I'm from ZHAW, Zurich University of Applied Sciences. We are not the richest university, so that's why, I mean, like, I can only allow the smallest model. Okay, and I tried, I asked something about, like, traveling from Geneva to Lausanne, and then immediately the problem came. It says, like, okay, leave at 9 a.m., then you arrive at 10:30. I mean, yes, I have mobile phone, yeah? I have, like, Swiss Railways app, and I can check. So basically, for tomorrow, this is tomorrow, yeah? So first, it's not about having no train at 9, okay? This is like the least problem. The problem is that trip doesn't go for an hour and a half. No, this is wrong. Though I would say price is pretty good, yeah? Look, I mean, so just think about it. Okay, and then I thought, okay, let's try to then help somehow to Apertus. And I just did it very easily. I took this Swiss railway API. I used PySBB. And basically, I took this train schedule. I gave it as a hint and also edited like to include rail train schedule at the toggler on the web page. And you know what? It worked immediately. So, I mean, really, it extracted very well the train schedule and the recommendations. I mean, I give them the top, yeah? Obviously, after main activities, there is dinner, there is how to spend evening, etc., etc., some hints. So, and if you want to see what's going next, then I even, as I said, I seriously deployed it. So, I mean, but, I mean, you can open, you can see that it works, yeah? I'm not sure about you generating anything, because seriously, I don't have yet any queuing, anything like this. I think it would drop immediately. Yes. So I mean, like OpenSea, well, nice design and that's it. But I mean, like, to me, it's more like a joke project. Yeah. That I just wanted to try out apparatus to see it around. But now I think, okay, I can maybe do more. I can maybe add some weather. I can maybe add some, Swiss hiking routes, et cetera, et cetera. So I mean, like, to give more help to apparatus and then to build like a nice Swiss travel AI agent, yeah, or whatever we call it. Yeah, so cool. Feel free to connect. And yeah, thanks for coming today. It was really nice. Thanks.
And with that, we are at the end of the landing talks. There were 131 slides in this slide deck, and I did not believe that could work for 45 minutes, but indeed it did.